Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Welcome to Irish Tech News. I'm Sangeeta Waldron, author of Corporate Social Responsibility is Not Public Relations. This is a special mini-series where I'm speaking with global business leaders and change makers about sustainability and ethical news. Today, I'm joined by Lois Acton, who I actually interviewed for my book. Lois has dedicated her life to making change, campaigning on social justice by involving music and the arts. Mentored by the late Dame Anita Roddick, who was founder of The Body Shop, Lois founded one of the first free schools in the UK, the Bermondsey Lamppost, in the 70s. Lois moved into British TV, working on a variety of programmes and groundbreaking initiatives. Her work at ITV included the launch of the MOBO Awards, the TV Diversity and Disability Networks, Carlton's TV support for the Commission for Racial Equality, Race in the Media Awards, and so much more. Welcome, Lois.
Good morning.
Morning. So let's get started. And it'd be great to know, what are you working on at this moment?
Well, when people talk to me, it's always quite interesting because I think, well, which project should I bring to the surface? But basically, my core things that I'm working on around the creative industries. So I'm particularly working on grassroots organisations and groups, and that's not just in the UK, but globally. And how do they meet up with the creative industries? And creative industries, for me, means everything from the gaming industry right the way through television, media, music, everything that is around creativity, and obviously into the science areas as well. So that's the main thing. And then there are specific projects within that. Some of them will occur because people want me to work with them on something as a collaboration. And one particular one is in Tanzania, where excitedly the very first solar city is being built, more as a model that can be copied all over Africa. But I'm looking at creative content of that in terms of how that translates into the curriculum from under fives right the way through to all the upper education areas. But very much about integrated creative learning, not dividing it into music or into television or into media, but how do we integrate that? And that's beginning to happen in the UK with courses, but it's very much key because this solar city will also include an agrarian. Tanzania is very much an agrarian economy. So agriculture is being maintained right up to the city centre, which is unusual. Havana, way back in Cuba, everybody had to grow something that they could eat. So part of the idea in Tanzania is that the existing topography and the existing plants and fertile areas are conserved, but the city will have inroads of agriculture into the city centre, and it will also include, obviously, education, creative industries and everything else around it. So, yeah, very exciting. And other than that, I work with various musicians and artists still, and that's another core part of what I do.
Do you get time to rest, Lois?
Dynamo. Interestingly, I also am very much involved at the moment with my daughter, who has just had a 4-year-old and a baby born in lockdown. And I'm actually co-parenting with her at the moment, partly because of the housing situation in London. So, yes, so that's another challenge, but a delightful one.
I'm sure. I mean, that project in Tanzania sounds just so exciting. I mean, how did you get involved with that?
Well, some of the key person who's been developing it is somebody that I've worked with in the UK, and he has been working with the Tanzanian government. I mean, obviously, there's been a massive change in the last few days in Tanzania because the existing head of the Tanzanian government died. Nobody's quite sure. Apparently, it's heart. But
yes, I read that.
Yeah, and so there's actually a woman who's just been appointed. Which is going to be, I think, really interesting. So hopefully the project will continue. At the moment, it doesn't have backing officially from the UK, but obviously we've had discussions here, and we're very much wanting to involve British architects and particularly people like David Adjaye, who has done an amazing project. He's a British architect who spent, I was lucky enough to go to his exhibition. He went throughout Africa looking at indigenous and African architecture and the way that it adapts to climate. Right. And he feels really strongly that buildings should be adapt to climate and should reflect the climate of the country. So when he went around Africa, he then contrasted it with what I suppose you would say colonial building style and what later building styles, which are completely inappropriate, using things like air conditioning, which then when there's no power, doesn't function. Yeah. So that was an amazing exhibition. It was quite a long time ago now, but David also actually was commissioned to build the African American Museum of Culture in Washington, which I was lucky enough to go to the opening of. So yes, it's exciting because I think the new things in particularly that is important to me is the way that although I've been involved with things like corporate social responsibility for a long time, the environment and sustainability is now obviously at long last coming to the forefront. But I mean, I studied geography at university a long time ago. Silent Spring was a Bible that I read, Rachel Carson. We studied the ozone layer. We looked at climate change. That was way back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I cannot believe it's 2021 and we're now racing to deal with climate change and sustainability. And for me, obviously, that all links together in whatever I'm working on, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things I want to ask you. So you've had a long career, you know, and you've had, you know, CSR has been at the forefront of that. Why are you so passionate about it? I know you touched a little bit just now at university, you studied geography, but why has that been a driver for you?
Well, I think, I mean, personal issues, obviously, for many people who are passionate about things. For me, a personal issue was that my father was blown up by an American landmine in Muscat and Oman. So it changed my life radically from one direction to another because I was only 11, 12 when that happened. And I suppose CSR for me goes back to social injustice, and injustice is something that I've always been passionate about. Injustices to my father, obviously, and then when I was younger, I think everything I saw and watched happening, the bottom line for me has always been, how do we make change and how can life be better for other people? So if you look at being passionate about CSR, I didn't know what the word was. I think the word now is almost going towards hopefully redundancy, because I think it's got to be more than that. It's got to be about society, social impact. It's got to be about environment and sustainability, but it's also got to be about governance. And with governance, you've got to have transparency. So going back to, I suppose, my first real big job in a corporate environment. I mean, I worked in NGOs. I set up and founded lots of different things. But working in a corporate situation, I went into television probably quite late, although I'd always made my own little films. And I went in to work on the telethon, which was to work with Thames and LWT, two television stations. And the one I was really working for lost the franchise to another company. And I was very lucky to join Carlton Television right at, well, before it went on air. And within that, we were actually, thanks to Michael Green, who whose company it was a much more open, I suppose, in a way, the social impact was as important to him as the profit margin. Mm-hmm. And I was later, although it's not a normal thing to do, I went to a conference, one of the first conferences ever on corporate social responsibility in Europe, and was sent by the company, even though I was working on the program making side. And it was an eye opener. I mean, all the business schools were there. They weren't really talking about CSR. They weren't training the MBAs with a huge amount of that side of the business. But the company itself, I was part of ITV. And I think with corporate social responsibility, for me, suddenly crystallizing, I suppose, into a way of forward of change, because you can work from the grassroots. And for me, the grassroots is really important. Grassroots organizations and groups come up with so much from the bottom up, good ideas, and activism is really important, but also companies need to change direction. So how do you talk with companies? How do you persuade companies that their triple bottom line is actually now probably the most important thing for them, rather than just their outright profit for their shareholders? And for me, it's got to be about a new blueprint, really, for the 21st century. And profit for purpose is what I would say is the most important thing for companies. And increasingly, their consumers, of whatever nature they are, and their workers, that is what they want. And I remember I've spoken at universities, and one of the most common questions that has been asked of me is, I don't want to work for a company that doesn't have a strong triple bottom line. They might not call it that, but they don't want to work for a company, these young graduates who are very bright, very clever. They are activists individually, and they want to be in a company that where their social impact and their ethos is good, that their sustainability and environmental are positive as well, and that the profits are not just going straight back to shareholders. Yeah, so there's a much broader view.
Yeah, so just on that, I mean, why do you think then businesses have taken so long to get on board with CSR and take it seriously?
I think I remember when I was talking, I was lucky enough to have a day with Anita Roddick. Anita Roddick was the founder of The Body Shop. She was, her own book is called Business as Unusual. And her model for business was very much about sustainable, you know, all the growth was about empowering the communities from where her products came from. I mean, for her, supply chains and procurement were so, so important. Yeah. And I think for businesses today, supply chains and procurement, that is where the major change can come. They control that. They can deal with that. So going back to your question, I think that because businesses, what she said to me, which I think is really important, is that when she sold Body Shop, which, you know, a lot of hands went up in the air and a lot of criticism, she was going on to the board of L'Oreal, who bought her company out. And she said to me, and I she can't, you know, say, I mean, sadly, Anita's no longer with us. Yeah. But she did say, it's a bit like steering a liner. And when you're steering a liner or a, you know, a long supply ship or something, it the tweaking to make it change direction is actually not that big. But people are scared of doing that. And I think it is a bit like that with companies. You know, I think they're beginning to recognize. I mean, if Mark Carney from the bank, who was the governor of the Bank of England.
Yeah.
Mark is, you know, he did the Reith lectures, which the big lectures on the BBC. Mark is saying, yeah, I mean, he's saying very much that, you know, we need to change business. It has to change. And I think I think people at the top, maybe for me, sometimes I think, well, they're not digital people still at the top of business across the world. I mean, most of them should be, but their younger staff certainly are. And I think we will see, as the younger generation comes through, I think we'll see a much faster change than we've seen so far. I mean, I'll be very brief. I was invited to speak in Helsinki to the European, there's a big conference which is held for all the media on an annual basis. I mean, obviously, probably the UK will no longer be part of that, but I was invited to be a speaker at that. And I spoke about the role of media and how it changes and how social media, this was some time ago, that social media would be the driving force and not the ordinary broadcasters. And there was a sort of, well, I wouldn't say it was hissing and booing, but it was a bit of a reaction like that to my speech. And yeah. I said, but you are dinosaurs. You are broadcasters from across. They were all the broadcasters of all the European big European broadcasting industry. I said, your position is going to change vastly in the next few years. And you are going to be realizing, I said, young people are already connecting on social media. And you're not understanding that. And I think they've had to change, but they came to the party late. And trying to persuade some of the big companies, they are coming to the party late, but there is now an index now of the 100 top performing companies in the world. There's more understanding of what corporate social responsibility do, but it mustn't be mixed with branding. Because that pollutes the whole message.
Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting. You talked about, you know, when you're giving that talk at Helsinki, you were booed off. There was a little bit of booing. Just on that. So what do you think about the cancel culture that's exists?
Well, right, I think cancel culture, you know, there's an argument it's got no place in corporate business, but unfortunately this is going to happen. I mean, you've got individual cancel culture happening with sadly with you know, individual people like JK Rowling and others, and you've got the use of it by the Republicans in the USA. We've got beginning of the use of it here, and if you look at it in corporate terms, and that's what fascinates me. Right, so what do we do about it? I think I have two. I mean, one of the things I really would love to do is that every time I go on a website to buy something, the first thing I view of a company is what it stands for, what is its social impact, what is it doing about its supply chains and its sustainability. And I want that transparent on the front page. Now, when I see that, do I then boycott that product if I'm not comfortable with? Is it in a language that I, as an ordinary consumer, I'm not an economist, I'm not, you know, the governor of the Bank of England, is it in a language that I quickly understand? Now, some people are beginning to use that. Obviously, Waitrose, the John Lewis's, for people who don't know, these are, Waitrose and John Lewis are companies where they are, their staff partly own the company, i.e. they get shares as part of how that company is run. Now, Lloyds Bank, for example, is particularly a big banking group who are particularly going down that road. So in their adverts on television, you know, they're beginning to state that. Or do I use social media to check things out, which can be fake news? And that is the whole thing with cancel culture, because, I mean, if we take the case maybe of Oatly, which is the big Swedish milk brand. Now, I'm still buying it for my daughter, but it actually sold out, I think it was 200 million in shares to a group, including Blackstone. So there was a huge... outcry. Now that is as cancel culture. It's an example, and the same with Lululemon. They resisted capitalism, and then you know, they took 40, I think it was 45 billion in market valuation or something. So, you know, do I buy from them or do I not buy from them? I would love to see a positive way forward. And I think one of the positive ways forward, which is not cancel culture, is what Richard Curtis and Mark Carney have been doing with their project to actually make My Money Matter, which is a campaign to look at the £1 trillion or whatever it is of pension fund money, and people actually saying, I don't want my pensions being invested in these types of companies. Now, obviously, there are banks that you can go to that do that. I mean, I bank partly with Triodos Bank.
Yeah.
Triodos is 25 years and it, or 26 years now in existence, a Dutch bank with now a branch in the UK because of Brexit. But they are invest their money for social impact.
Yeah.
So I think part of me says, no, I'm not going to buy from companies, and I try not to buy from companies that I don't like. I mean, I don't particularly warm to the Amazon model at all. And what do I do if I need to buy something? So yes, I think maybe we have to use a stick sometimes, but mostly let's try the carrot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's a lot in what you say. So, Lois, my last question to you is, what would you say to your 21-year-old self?
Oh, that's funny. that's really, this is really interesting because I still think I'm 19 anyway. So, you know, this is quite a good question.
You are. I mean, you've got more energy.
Sadly, I am still 19. I'm still very positive. I think I was very positive when I was 21, and I would keep that with me. I mean, I'd been lucky enough by the age of 21 to have been in charge of an old people's home by the age of 21, to have worked alongside people with girls with severe physical disabilities in the very first opening of a grammar school, i.e. attainment, high education for people with very severe physical disabilities. So I'd been a matron there. And this is before I went to university. But more importantly, along with what happened to my father, I had been building a road in Switzerland, building something for a community in France. And then I was one of the first two women ever to be allowed to go and build a school in Fez in Morocco. So I had seen real poverty in very wealthy countries. So in Switzerland, we built a road high up in the mountains in the Alps. I mean, I literally had blood coming out of my hands because I had no idea how to use a pickaxe, because we did it with pickaxes and till some very lovely fellow worker came and showed me how to use a pickaxe. I love using a pickaxe now, but I've got one. But, you know, I saw the real poverty up in the mountains in Switzerland, which is a really wealthy country, even back then. And then we went to work in a very poor area of France, where I was a work camp leader at 17. And then going to work in Morocco, I had never seen anything like it. And then later years, you know, by the time of 21, I think it embedded in me that sense of injustice that you can do things that make a positive change. And I'm so lucky that I experienced those things. And I see that in young activists today. And that keeps me going, I suppose. And yes, 21 now is 21 then. And I would say to myself, what you've seen is what you should hold with you for the rest of your life.
Wow. I mean, more power to you, Lois. Absolutely more power to you. And how can people connect with you?
Well, I'm not the quickest on social media at the moment, partly because there's a 3-year-old and a nearly 1-year-old in my life. I catch catching up. I'm on LinkedIn with my name. I'm on Facebook, and also I'm on Instagram. And on Instagram, it's Lois_Unlimited, because what I do now is called Urban Unlimited Network. And the network is about connecting people together in all sorts of different ways.
Wonderful. Well, I'll certainly find you on Instagram, Lois. And thank you so much for inspiring us all. There's just so much that you've given us during this conversation. And keep going, Lois. We need more of your, all the projects and everything you're doing and helping us all to connect the dots. Thank you.
Well, thank you as well, because you've asked me some quite searching questions.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.